You're listening to an OTB AM podcast. You can watch the show or listen live every weekday morning from 7:45 AM. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream for more stuff just like this. And a very good morning to you. Welcome along this Thursday morning to OTB AM. We're here with you all the way until 9:30. As ever, if you're watching us, you can just listen to us. You can head on to offtheball.com and hit the listen live button and minimise us. And you don't even have to look at our ugly mugs for the next 2 hours or so. We can just be radio in the background for you. If you want to drop us a comment, use the hashtag OTBAM and we'll pick it up. OTBAM. Five letters. OTBAM. Oh, and how are you?
Very well. How are you?
I'm good. Are you as good as Jack Byrne is at the moment? Riding high, playing well, scoring goals, dominating games, finally beginning to fulfil your potential and getting the national profile that your talent deserves.
Yeah, I don't think I'm quite as good as Jack Byrne or quite as happy as Jack Byrne is right now. But, you know, I think we're all getting a little bit of this bubbliness from the Irish camp that's coming out at the moment. Everything's very happy. There's a charm offensive, if I can use that phrase, going on from the Ireland camp. Is that a cynical way of looking at it? This is Jack Byrne, by the way, that we're going to look at, who's going to shake hands.
That's not Jack Byrne.
We are going to see him in a second.
Where is Jack Byrne? Explain, tell us, Owen, where is Jack Byrne?
There he is. And he is going to, he's just after coming back from shaking hands with all the journalists in the room. Sean Maguire's smile there, quite telling.
Sean McGuire's smile is, what the hell are you doing? You're making me look bad. Get back up here. Jesus. Alright, so that's what you're supposed to do. See, what this does immediately is it makes every single journalist in the room think, wow, I am now a big fan of Sean McGuire.
Of Sean McGuire?
Of Jack Byrne.
Oh, right. I was like, that's a very cynical way
should,
of...
Should we make Jack Byrne captain of the Ireland team? You could, I'm going to say we're about T-minus 5 minutes away from the first one of those...
Yeah, like he's not only did he kind of go around the press room and shake everybody's hand yesterday, he also delivered pretty good quotes, and he's had a very interesting couple of years, and he's had more downs than ups, I think it's fair to say, since he's come back from the Netherlands, as Tommy walks into the back of shot here. Obviously, we've had a man with us in when he was playing in the Netherlands a couple of years ago with Cambuur, and it seemed that the sky was the limit for this guy, and it seemed suddenly that the limits were getting lower and lower, and that potentially this guy was going to struggle to get back to a level where we might actually be speaking about him. But thankfully, we've got a manager now, the Republic of Ireland, who is very open-minded to the idea of bringing in League of Ireland players, and that's a positive for the league, it's a positive for the individuals in it. And like when somebody kind of exudes that sort of kind of people-person nature in a press conference like that, you'd imagine that they're a person who's based quite a bit on confidence, and is backing from someone like Mick McCarthy going to help your confidence? Of course it is.
All right, well, let's hear from Jack Byrne, who yesterday was speaking to the media.
Just, I remember you were in here a couple of years back under Martin O'Neill, and I think we were all struck by your confidence at the time. And even though you may not have had a chance maybe getting into the team, but you know, going back to the days when you were at Man City and you were being talked up by Patrick Vieira, and I said, now you're Shamrock Rovers and seem to be getting your career back on track. What kind of happened in between? Why do you think it never really... Was it off the pitch stuff or...?
No. You know, I left Man City. I signed for Wigan. I signed 3.5 year deal. And 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, the manager was gone that signed me. Like, so you can't, you know... can't dwell on these things and, you know... You never think that's going to happen when you're in that situation. You know, I was leaving it was a big decision for me to leave Man City at the time. I had, you know, 2 years left on my contract. I could have easily stayed there and, you know, went back to the 23s. I went back out on loan to Holland. I'd done something like that. I wanted to try and prove that, you know, we was ready for men's football. And, you know, the gamble obviously didn't pay off at the time. And you just have to, you know, sometimes you just have to reset, take 2 steps forward or 2 steps back, you know, 1 step back to go 2 steps forward, should I say. So, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm grateful that I'm, you know, I'm back, you know, touch wood, playing well again.
Would you like to, I suppose it's a well-beaten track now from League of Ireland back to maybe a top-flight English club. Do you think you can get across there again?
To be honest, I'm not even thinking about that. I'm just thinking about training now in a half an hour. So, you know, I obviously want to do well for Rovers, but you can't think like that. I've just got to take it day by day, and whatever happens, happens.
Aaron Stephen Doyle asking the questions there. And it's good to hear from him, too, that, like, professional sports people have notoriously short attention spans, at least that they're willing to admit publicly, in terms of it's next game, it's the next ball in the next game, as opposed to I have this master plan. And no doubt he has some master plan gestating away in the back of his brain, but getting regular game time, playing really well, if he does that, everything else falls into place.
Yeah, I think from his experiences over the past couple of years, he'll be the first person to tell anyone that you can have a master plan, but that master plan can be torn up into shreds pretty quickly in professional football. And I do think we need to be a little bit careful. Like, I'm excited to see Jack Byrne involved in the Ireland squad. I was excited to see him as a 19-year-old involved in the Ireland squad a couple of years ago as well. But we've got to be careful about this notion of Jack Byrne being back or whatever, that ultimately we looked at this guy who was a product of Manchester City, who had gone abroad, who looked like he was going to come back to Manchester City and potentially become a Premier League player. And if he didn't make it at Manchester City, well, he could go down to, say, a bottom half team in the Premier League or the top half of the Championship potentially, and that hasn't happened for him. So I think the expectations had been tempered back then, and they've had to be tempered once again to the point where we're at now, that he's playing for Shamrock Rovers. And ultimately, like, it's great for the League of Ireland, it's great for Shamrock Rovers, and it's great for Jack Byrne, who I believe will get back to England eventually, but we do need to be careful about what we're actually expecting from him right now.
Well, do we? I mean, is he not playing the best football of his life? Like, he is. He is playing the best football of his life. And I think that, like, it's good to have those expectations. I think we should stop talking about him going away and start going, this is an amazing thing that is happening in the league at the moment. You've got a player of his talent who is scoring like the goal he just scored that everybody has now seen courtesy of social media. And I don't know, like, I think it's good.
This is the last fortnight we're judging this on.
Yeah, but like, that's the
I'm just saying we just need to be a little bit careful of what we're saying here. That, like,
I'm saying that he's a really good player and we're seeing him play really well at the minute, and like, it's okay for us to expect him to do well, as opposed to saying, oh, you're going to have to prove that to me over a long period of time. It's like, let's enjoy this, you know, and let's bring those expectations and go, come on, you can do this. You can do whatever it is you want with football.
Yeah, well, I'm not necessarily saying that. I'm just almost kind of like checking my own expectations rather than telling him to check his expectations, to be honest. Like, if I was a footballer in the Ireland camp, of course I want to look at it saying the sky's the limit, but I don't know.
It has been one of the
good stories over the last week, and it's a good story because it's a great story for the league. But ultimately, that's what it is. It's a player from the League of Ireland who's in the Ireland camp. Is a player in the League of Ireland ultimately going to be the reason why Ireland qualify for the Euros? Probably not. And that's just the honest take on it. Okay, like, do I expect Jack Byrne to get back to?
Are you not living in the old paradigm here, where the league was the league, and actually not taking into account the fact that the original Shamrock Rovers under Michael O'Neill happened, the second wave of great European success happened under Stephen Kenny, and there's now a third wave where Rovers, who at the time got pilloried for keeping their young manager, have ridden out that issue. He's come through the other side of it. They've started to attract top quality Irish talent back from England at a time when, as he says, he could be sitting picking up whatever it was, 5, 8, 10 grand a week in the Wigan reserves. And I think that we should have expectations that these players can be meaningful contributors over the course of a campaign like this.
Well, like, I'm not actually really going against that, to be honest. I am all, like, we've got to also realise that it's early in the League of Ireland season as well, that, like, my excitement's going to grow for this guy once he continues this form for the rest of the season. Like, we're not only judging this on League of Ireland form, we're judging this on the last couple of weeks of League of Ireland form. It's early in the year. Like, if he puts down a full season of this, if he scores more goals like he scored last week, then the excitement's going to grow. I'm going to start getting carried away. I'm just saying, potentially, but I don't want to, you know, stab my beloved bows, my newly beloved bows in the back. But for once in my life, I've kind of learned that getting carried away is not the correct option right now. But hopefully, it will become an option.
You can't change your habits of a lifetime. Here's what's coming up on the show this morning. Kieran Fitzgerald of Currafin, the Currafin legend, is going to join us around about 8:30. Kieran Donaghy, obviously, for the shot clock at 8:10 this morning. The sports page is coming your way right now, and we'll have Darren in a little bit later on to bring us through the sports news. We'll also be talking about rugby around about 9:15, and Tommy Walsh is going to join us to talk about the various form of some key players in big teams around the country and the Allianz League hurling semi-finals, which are due to take place. How important those league games are at this point? Is it just a better than training session training run, or is it actually meaningful competition where big decisions and markers are laid down for later on in the summer? Tommy Walsh can join us around about 8:45 this morning. So let's take you through the newspapers. We'll start this morning with the Irish Times. Doherty in a happier place as he looks forward to a new campaign. This is the Matt Doherty, who was also up for press yesterday, or Matt Doherty as he's called. Across the there was an advisory sent out by an English news agency with the phonetic pronunciation of Doc, D-O-C-K, for Matt Doherty. Like, Neil Tracy brought this to our attention this morning on his Twitter account. So, come on.
Does that actually wind you up?
We got it right. I mean, telling people the wrong thing is wrong.
Yeah, it is.
Like, yeah, that winds me up. That's the type of shit that you should get right.
Yeah, like there's a conspiracy theory that BBC and all these news services are actually all on the one page here, and they know that they're winding us up with their mispronunciation of Doherty. And I really hope that that's the case, and I hope that it's kind of working on people like you.
Okay. All right. The other story there is the Leo Varadkar getting into the FAI's business, getting into the FAI's business bit, where he was asked yesterday about the 100 grand loan that John Delaney gave the FAI. It does seem a bit unusual, he said, speaking at government buildings. A body that size, given its operations and the funding it receives, I would have thought has banking facilities that would have provided for a loan. And I know that Sport Ireland and the Joint Committee of the Oireachtas will want to ask some questions as to why that came about. It is a matter for the FAI, which is an independent body and has its own board. Obviously, he's a former Minister for Sport, so he knows all this and he knows he can't get involved. Is it a resigning matter for Delaney? No, not in my view. But that would not be a matter for me. That's a matter for the FAI board. So, ultimately, that is a vote of confidence when you think about it. Because if the Taoiseach had come out and added pressure to John Delaney, then there would have been more pressure. But there wasn't. So, and then there's a picture of Max Deegan. Versatile Deegan, content. He's heading in the right direction. Former World Under-20 Player of the Year. A teammate in that Under-20s team of some of the young Tyros who were the backbone of the Ireland team for the Grand Slam. Do we need some outside, a new bunch of young players to come through out of nowhere and suddenly make their way into the Ireland World Cup squad? Is there room for somebody like that at the moment, or is the door shut?
Well, I like when we had Brian O'Driscoll on Monday night, he said that the whole thing hasn't been blown wide open, and that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not saying that there's opportunities for everybody. But I think when you look at players who are going to return to the Irish fold, you're probably looking at players like Sean Cronin, Jack McGrath, players who've been very well established for Ireland or in Ireland squads in the past, like Max Deegan picture there. Like it's
Dan Levy back.
Dan Levy. Like, well, Dan Levy is 100% going to return. Like, that was all injury enforced. But, like, you look at someone like Max Deegan, it's actually an interesting quote from him, or interesting information, really, around Max Deegan. You'd almost forget that he was young World Player of the Year, beating the likes of James Ryan in his year to that particular award. And it's just taken him a little while, just because there's such a queue in his position in back rows at Leinster at the moment.
So the Times Ireland edition there is radical laws to improve rugby safety. We'll talk about this a little bit later on. These are suggested laws, law changes that would make the game a little bit safer. And there's a picture of Mick McCarthy on the training ground wearing a different type of training gear to what the lads were wearing. There's the lime green and then there's the dark green, and there was a lot of oohing and aahing on social media about it. I do like the Ireland gear at the minute. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I haven't really looked at it and actually made any sort of decision on it. Is that is that good fashion? Is it navy and green? You might have a better idea. I really have no clue. Does that work?
Blue and green should never be seen except in the dress of an Irish queen.
Oh, really? I've never heard that phrase. I'll keep that in mind.
Happy campers. That's the Ireland camp is happy. Matt Doherty giving an interview. He was up yesterday. He was saying life is more enjoyable. Mick, there was you were saying an interesting exchange when he was asked about an interview that he did towards the end of was it the very end, or was it just after? It was just before the end of the Martin O'Neill era.
Yeah, certainly around the end of the Martin O'Neill era. It's like he was just saying to the press yesterday, I actually can't remember what I said. What did I actually say? I don't think I said anything that bad. And then whoever was sitting beside him in the press room was like, you said too much, which perhaps might have been true from a Martin O'Neill perspective at the time.
But that was a joke, right?
I presume it was a joke. You can't really tell from the newspaper sometimes.
MP calls for racing to end its infighting. Whatever. Tiger Grand National gamble rolls on. Okay, the Grand National gamble on Tiger Roll strengthened yesterday as bookmakers slashed his chances of becoming a first back-to-back winner of the race since Red Rome into as short as 7-2. 7-2 to win the Grand National. There might be some other value each way in that race if, you know. Okay, so four-time Cheltenham Festival winner on Tuesday was an 11-2 chance But 4-1 was the best price available yesterday, with Gold Cup runner-up Annabelle Fly next best at 12-1.
Jesus.
I mean, that's quite a heavy favourite. Spanish Civil War, Garcia can have last laugh over compatriot Ram. There is no Spanish Civil War in golf. It's golf, they're all.
And what does the last laugh constitute? Are they like both standing on the 18th green and he holds a putt, Ram misses and he laughs in his face, or how does it actually manifest itself?
Spits in the hole.
Yeah. And like pushes him away from him. Drapes the Spanish flag over his shoulder.
It's a happier camp here with Mick. It's a happier camp with Mick here, says Doherty. And then City's Sané scare. Club managers are really fans of international football. Pep Guardiola had some justification if he felt the force. Sorry, if he felt the same after Leroy Sané was forced off in Germany's friendly with Serbia last night. Sané was challenged by Milan Pavkov, challenged as in grabbed by around the neck and wrestled to the ground, which sees him sent off, and then Sané's like, no, leave me alone, you're so big.
Pavkov, I think that was a different player who wrestled Sané around the neck.
Oh, was it? Okay, so he was actually properly kicked.
Yeah, Pavkov, you can see it at the bottom left image there.
Picture, yeah.
It's horrendous, and Pavkov, after going in, both players are lying on the ground and Sané's legs like flailing in the air, and Pavkov just grabs his legs and like, get out of my face. So it's a proper sort of borderline leg breaker, and then the disrespect of the get out of my face, get your legs away from my body, how dare you, Leroy Sané. And then the manager, the Serbian manager, kind of gives Pavkov a little tap on the head as he's walking off the pitch, despite the fact that his player has basically gone out to end the season of a world-class footballer. Pretty deliberately by the looks of things. It was a horrendous challenge. It was absolutely horrific. And I don't know what the beef is there. I didn't see the game, so I don't know what actually happened with that little sort of bit of an altercation earlier on in the game. Did he like piss off his teammate? Did he say something to him?
There's a better picture of it there.
Like, Jesus Christ. Like, I mean,
explain if
Leroy Sané is insanely lucky that his leg isn't split into two right now this morning, because he has got him just above the ankle. Even if you're wearing a concrete ankle bracelet, you have got a chance of breaking your ankle there. I've got no idea how Leroy Sané has allowed himself to be so lucky in that situation. So, yeah, certainly Pavkov tried to do what he tried to do there, and then, as I say, kind of had no remorse afterwards whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be a shithead about stuff, you should have no remorse until at least you get to the dressing room where you're like, oh, that's bad, that looks pretty bad, no? You gotta carry it off on the field. If you're going to be that person, if that's Brand Pavkov,
mm-hmm. Red Star Belgrade star,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, I mean that is in keeping with a long line of Belgrade people. There's a great story brewing from the last round of the Allianz National Hurling League games. Cork had a player sent off. Kilkenny had a player sent off. And Cork and Kilkenny were due to play each other in a relegation playoff, and they weren't going to bother playing it because, like, why would we bother playing this? It's like, are you in Division 1A, you in Division 1A1, or whatever they're called next year? Because there's no Division 1 and 2. It's like split decisions. And actually, losing that game would have resulted in you having an easier run to the league finals, if there are league finals next year. Whatever that myriad variations of the competition will be next season. And it turns out the GAA are like, no, that game that you're going to play between you each other will not count to expunge the suspensions of the guys who were sent off in the last round. They're going to be suspended for the championship. The game went ahead, and Kilkenny and Cork are like, screw you, that game counts. I mean, it's your game, of course it counts. And the GAA still are at the moment, their disciplinary body, not the GAA obviously, are like, no, it doesn't count. So now there's this row brewing about this, like, phantom suspension. What counts as a game? Is a game even a game? If no one cares about the game, is it a game?
Well, I'm on Kilkenny and Cork side in all of this. I think if you get a suspension based on lashing out in the league, which they did, then you serve your suspension
in the league.
In the league, especially because there was a league game available. It's not Cork and Kilkenny's fault that the competition structures are being changed. In any other year, a relegation playoff would be a pretty big deal.
What if you kill somebody in the last round of the league? Do you get straight back in for the championship next week?
No, your ban would carry over to the. If somebody got sent off in the relegation playoff last Saturday, then they missed the first game of the championship. It should be whatever, a one game ban, and I've always maintained that it should be a game by game banning process in the GEA,
irrespective of the competition. So if you get sent off in the league, if Kerry reached the league final and you get a three game ban, you can't really get a three game ban in the GEA. You need to literally kill someone.
You would need to spit at somebody while headbutting them, while kneeing them in the balls. that would be a 3-game ban.
It wouldn't. You get the one game for that.
Yeah.
You would. You get the one game.
If you produce a weapon, you get a 3-game ban.
Yeah, pull a gun.
Pull a gun.
Kneecap somebody. Mm-hmm. Sorry, yeah, it was an accident.
And kidnap them.
Yeah.
Hold them hostage for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and then you get a 3-game ban. They're like, you can't play until... Can't play until the Super 8s.
Until you release the hostage.
So, I got lost there. What were we talking about?
Should there be game-by-game bans? I think there should be.
No, so, I don't know. I mean,
And, like, in this situation, it does kind of benefit the players here, who both rightly got red cards in this situation. They both lashed out at an opposition player with a hurl, which is...
A red card.
It's a severe enough action.
Yeah.
And they were both very frustrated acts, but I still think, you know, it's a league red card. It gets served in the same competition, so even better.
All right. What have you got?
The Herald's. The headline is Max Small Tweaks to Lift Mood. That's the headline of Aidan Fitzmaurice's piece. And he's also writing about twist in FAI saga as Senator wants meeting brought forward. So John O'Mahony has been speaking and saying that we can't wait for the Oireachtas Committee next month, that he wants it brought forward a couple of weeks. The Irish Daily Mail goes with no apologies, few regrets for Doherty over O'Neill criticism, and Blue Brigade avoid bridge to force Sarri's exit. So this is Chelsea fans voting with their feet and not showing up using their season tickets as protest to get Maurizio Sarri out of the club. The Mirror then goes with happy slap. Doherty says everyone seems to be enjoying it. Training is fun. We know what we are doing. And Sancho out for £100 million and Blues star in. So Borussia Dortmund will put a £100 million price tag on Jadon Sancho this summer and then try to replace him with Callum Hudson-Odoi. The other story here on the back page of the Mirror, and it's carried across the Sun actually, the Sun lead with it, is Pog's real dream. I'd love to play for Zidane. Pog's real dream, I should say. So Paul Pogba has put his Manchester United future in doubt, admitting it will be a dream to play for Real Madrid. So Zinedine Zidane's obviously back there, and he says Real Madrid is a dream for anyone. It's one of the biggest clubs in the world. There's also Zinedine Zidane as a coach. So he's not exactly being fully 100% loyal to Manchester United. He's keeping his options open, and in French camp this week has said that it'll be a dream to join Real Madrid. Also, you've got Matt Doherty there pictured as well. I'm not a liar. What have I said that is wrong? He stands by his O'Neill talk. The Star then goes with smiles better. Matt says mix brought enjoyment back to Ireland. And Conway silence and saga as well, says Paul Lennon. FAI President Donal Conway has taken a vow of silence as the FAI and John Delaney Bridgegate fiasco rumbles on. So repeated attempts by the Star to speak to the retired Swords Bay school teacher on the issue were blanked by him, apart from a text message to direct queries to the FAI's spokesman. The Guardian go with crew in spotlight. Benel expenses claim raises questions about legal defence. It's more information from Daniel Taylor on that one. And another exclusive here, England pair in hot water over Six Nations late night. Benteo and Billy Vunipola breach team orders on drinking after Scotland draw. And then finally, it is the Telegraph. The Telegraph Women in Sport Elite Sportswomen Survey, 29% have experienced sexual harassment, 49% have been bullied, 72% say they have been judged on their looks, while 73% agree the level of sexism is unreal. So it's a couple of pages on that in the Daily Telegraph this morning. And also an exclusive here on the Lions, the next Lions tour. Lions plan £10 million Twickenham match but face backlash from top clubs in the Premiership. So I think for the next Lions tour they'll have to push the Premiership final forward a few weeks to accommodate a match in Twickenham for the Lions before they go down to South Africa.
What kind of like a Lions versus Barbarians type knockout?
Yeah, I think the last time it happened
in Argentina,
it cites a Barbarians game in 1977.
There have been other stuff in between. They played a game in Hong Kong and they played
In Twickenham. It'll be the first Lions fixture in England since the first officially sanctioned match against Barbarians.
Yeah, but they played in the Millennium Stadium against Argentina. Mm-hmm. Did they draw that game? Was that? And it was like a warm up before they went, which like had no bearing really on. I think it had no. I don't think the team was fairly similar to the actual team itself, and then loads of injuries happened anyway. So it's just a moneymaker.
Yeah, I would say so. The Pro 14 are up for it. They're willing to push their final forward. The Premiership, though, always a stumbling block.
Yeah. There's something in that. You may have touched a nerve with that one. So, that Kilkenny Cork game, do you know what happened in it at the weekend?
No.
That's like, it's mad, isn't it?
No. Too busy watching the rugby, following the rugby.
To look it up, Cork beat Kilkenny 215 to 116. with 1-2 in the last couple of minutes at Nolan Park to record a dramatic victory. So it sounds like a great game.
But completely pointless, obviously.
Do you assume both sides are taking it pretty seriously? And if you're on the fringes of that Kilkenny team and Brian Curdy throws you in for that, are you assuming that that player as an individual is taking it really seriously?
Yeah, I think that the players will be. Do players take challenge matches behind closed doors seriously?
Yeah, they
do. This is the same as that. Ultimately, it doesn't really matter what the player's kind of view of a game, it doesn't matter what their view of a game is right now, because we're going into a season. What do the supporters think? And the attendances were pretty poor at the weekend. That being said, they were poor across bowl codes and cross bowl competitions, including All Ireland finals at Croke Park, but that's a story for another day potentially.
What do you think was behind that?
Is it just simply down to the fact that there has been a precipitous decline in the interest of Gaelic games as a neutral spectacle?
But surely the Carfing Crokes game would have been the type of thing that would have got everybody salivating a little bit. If there was ever a game you could sell to the neutrals, that was the game.
Potentially. Maybe it was a lack of somebody from the capital involved in either code, which kind of diminished the returns. Maybe it was because there was two from the one county in Galway, did that diminish the amount attending? Has there been just so many false dawns in terms of the likes of games like Hurricane against Croke? So many moments where we thought over the last couple of years, especially in county football, that we would be getting classics, and they've been absolutely terrible affairs.
Maybe.
Maybe people are more cynical. So I certainly wasn't. But I've learned my lesson now, I think.
Which is?
Never think that a game is going to be good or competitive, because you're going to be badly wrong.
Alright, we're going to get to the shot clock with Kieran Donaghy in just a minute. First though, here's Seanan McGuire speaking ahead of Ireland's trip to Gibraltar, including his pretty frank assessment of the Irish performances so far.
Sean, you would have watched Ireland as a fan and watched Robbie Keane, I'm sure, support him when you were younger. What's it like now that you're watching, or you're being coached by him now from the sidelines as part of mixed team, and the responsibility of qualifying is on your shoulders as a player now? How does that feel?
Yeah, it's an amazing feeling. You know, it was my first time meeting Robbie coming in Sunday, and even chatting to him, he brings that all about him, and you want to learn from him straight away. Even in the space of the last couple of days, him giving you tips here and there, it's just great to be involved of, you know, a player of his stature, and I've no doubt that, you know, even in the space of these 10 days being involved with Robbie, that will probably come from strength to strength, and hopefully, you know, kick on as a player, because, you know, he's a player where you want to look up to him, everything what you want to be. I think his goals speak for himself, 68 goals for Ireland, and hopefully, you know, these next couple of games, hopefully I can kick on my international career.
Mick went to see you playing against QPR first, and then he said he went to see you play against Millwall. He said QPR game, he wasn't impressed at all, but then he went to see you playing against Millwall, and he said he thought you were a really fantastic player. Can you kind of see where he might have had the different perspectives on both games?
Well, to be fair, QPR was probably my first start in a couple of months since that, you know, the hamstring injury against Northern Ireland. I played off the left as well, so I've played off the left on numerous occasions this season, but to be fair, I was only getting back into the groove of things, and I'll probably say so myself that I didn't particularly have a good game, but yeah, against Millwall, I think I was seeing me at, you know, near my best. We won 3-1, I scored a goal. I think Millwall kind of, you know, fell into our trap, and, you know, we hit him on a counter attack, and, you know, I really impressed that day. I was really happy with myself, and even since then now, I felt that I've kicked on a little. Probably would like to score a couple of more goals, but, you know, for me it's just about finishing out games and, you know, say fully fit for now to the end of the season. When I'm playing, when I'm fully fit, I think my record speaks for itself, but I think what I have put the Irish jersey on, I don't think I've done myself any justice. I've only had one start and obviously a couple of cameos, but, you know, when the time I started actually this time last year against Turkey, I didn't particularly play well at all and didn't play up to the standards I set myself. But yeah, given the opportunity, I think I can bring goals. And I suppose these are the type of games or a striker where you're probably going to be given opportunities to put the ball in the back of the net, and, you know, I'll relish that opportunity.
Seems pretty confident.
Mm-hmm. I'd have great confidence in him as well. It's a huge opportunity for him, and he does seem like the type of character that when an opportunity is presented to him, he kind of tends to take it. It's someone who's gone over to England and held his own. So many of them have gone over and bombed, or just haven't, I don't know, had the required level, even though they thought they might. Sean Maguire is not one of those players, and it does seem, doesn't it, that he is getting better with time, that we still haven't seen the best of Sean Maguire, which is a really exciting prospect.
Yeah, there's a long tradition of Irish players getting better as they reach 26, 27, 28, 29. As whatever it is that's in the system, they manage to get out of their system and become seasoned professionals and start fulfilling their full potential. So who should start for Ireland up front this weekend and probably by extension into next week? Here's who Kevin Kilbane would start. Have a look.
4-4-1-1, I think. I'd play McGoldrick off Sean and Maguire up front. I think McGoldrick is a good link man. I think he's an intelligent player. Played with him at Coventry. Really impressed with him. I said to you, I used to call him Eddie. He didn't have a clue who Eddie McGoldrick was when I used to call him Eddie McGoldrick. But I like him as a player. I like his personality. He's very cool, very calm. Takes the ball under pressure. He's the sort of player that will demand from you as well. When I was playing in the middle of the park, that would have been just been behind him when I was at Coventry. Albeit short space of time, demanding. Give me the ball, wants the ball. And then Sean in front. There's a suggestion that James Collins could be playing up front as the number nine in the game. I think Sean Maguire has earned the chance to play there.
See, I think the only issue with Maguire might well be that his hamstrings are very, very
on the pitch
beast right now.
On that pitch.
Yeah.
I can see it.
Just given that you've the Georgia game in a few days, what Georgia game comes around Tuesday, if you're looking at Maguire and his injury profile speaks for itself and he's got to do all sorts of programs and prehab to keep himself keep himself ticking over. It's very tempting for Mick, I'm sure, to say, if I need you, I need you Tuesday.
Yeah, I understand that a little bit, and there is the luxury that he's got that he could do that. Of course, nor Shane Long out of the side now as well. You could play Aidan O'Brien up there instead of Sean Maguire.
But then you don't want to be sitting there after 50 minutes.
Well, that's the point. Scores. Are you going to bring Sean Maguire off the bench then? I'd prefer to start him.
Yeah, isn't that the way to do it? Get Sean Maguire started, score a couple, bring him off at halftime? Best case scenario?
Yeah, potentially. And Aidan O'Brien offers something very different, potentially better off the bench. I know it's a very easy thing to say, given the physical stature of him and all that. Like, it's perfect, isn't it, the schedule? Is this one of the more vital Georgia games over the last couple of years? Like, it seems like a bizarre thing to say, given how...
They all ended up being completely vital.
Like, given the one that we went to BC and drew in, 2017 at this point, which ultimately staggered our World Cup qualification hopes for Russia, that probably will be the most important. But I often wonder if we get 6 points from this, what this will do in the long term from an Irish perspective. Because I really think that there has been kind of like a chicken and egg situation here with Irish footballers' form at club level. Like, really, how badly did the international setup actually affect some players at club level? Was their confidence so low that they actually couldn't produce it for their club? Maybe I'm kind of overthinking it there. But ultimately, if they get 6 points from this, particularly when at home to Georgia after, you know, not beating them last time we played them, I think that's a pretty big plus from an Irish perspective, even though we should be beating them according to rankings and all that. I think it would be a brilliant, brilliant start. The confidence that would come from that. If Shawnee Maguire or someone like that starts both games, gets goals in both games, we're suddenly looking at this team and we're like, we're all right. We're in decent shape. And the idea that, you know, we can nick a couple of points off the big two in the group kind of seemed like a fanciful notion at the start of this when the draw happened. But I don't think it would seem so if we're convincing against Georgia at home.
How convincing? Does any of that stuff matter? Like, I've never actually seen form roll from an international break into another international break. Really, like...
My point is, like, that's my point, though, is that I really feel it's kind of had a rolling impact on a lot of these players in terms of their club form, and that is the sort of momentum that I'm talking about here, that there, I think it got so bad for a while there that there was no separation, that the cloud of international football was almost hanging over these footballers.
When are you talking about?
During the end of the Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane era.
I mean, when you think back to it, Ireland got out of the group in the Euros and went up against France, who end up winning the World Cup, and we're 1-0 up under Martin O'Neill. So there's only a short period of time when international football got bad under Martin O'Neill.
Yeah.
Like that, we would take now getting out of the group at the Euros.
There was two years
for this group.
He was there for 2 years after that.
Yeah. He was there for 2 years after that. But like, it's not this it's not the Staunton era.
No, I know that. I know that. But it was pretty dramatic, the downward spiral that happened post... it's not even post Euro 2016, because we started the World Cup qualifying campaign so well.
I would take 2-1 nils and have 6 points at the end of this and be happy. Absolutely.
But was the first signs of things going wrong at the end of the Martin O'Neill era not in the Aviva Stadium against Georgia? Remember when Seamus Coleman scores the worst goal of all time? When he somehow manages to get the ball dribble and keep dribbling.
That was a beautiful Irish goal. What are you talking about?
It's like all the Georgia players are ghosts and he's just walking through them.
It's an amazing Irish, perfect Irish goal.
It depends on how into irony you are. It was
like the stereotypically beautiful example of an Irish goal in a big international match.
We were terrible that night.
Yeah, we were, yeah. They completely
passed us apart. I think that was the first warning sign.
I don't know. We'll come back to that because we've got a full week to talk about international football. So let's move on because we're going to get to Tommy Walsh in just a minute. But former Irish head coach Philip Doyle, this is rugby, was speaking with Joe last night about the Irish women's rugby team and their steep decline over the last number of years, having gone from Grand Slam winners to, well, what are they now? Have a look.
It is an Olympic sport, and they are going to go for qualification, but unfortunately it's been totally at the detriment of the 15s. We've asked for a technical review after the World Cup 2 years ago, and we got a three-point aim for the next World Cup. One of them was to finish top three in the Six Nations. Well, that's obviously gone flat in its head straight off. So the big question for me is basically the technical director of the women's side is Anthony Eddy, yeah. And basically the whole game was completely dismantled. And where is he on this point? Like, where are we going here? We've asked this a couple of years ago again for direction, and technical direction is just non-existent as far as I can see. We are going backwards.
All right, pretty strong stuff there. You can get more of that on offtheball.com. Right, let's go to the shot clock. Kieran Donnelly is with us. The rules are pretty simple. We have 7 topics. We've got 5 minutes with a relevant guest, and this week it's from Carr Finn. We'll bring you that in a couple of minutes' time. But we get 2 minutes, the air horn sounds, and at the end of that, one of us wins, / me. Kieran, good morning to you. How you doing?
Morning, Joe. How are you, buddy?
I'm very well. Thanks very much for being with us this morning. We're going to start with a point that Enda McGinley raised on the show yesterday. We were talking about the Dubs and how they lack superstars in some key positions. There's two real positions. One is under the high ball in the fullback line, and the other one is at that moment of need, that moment of crisis in the second half of a big game. Which of the forwards are you giving the ball to and saying, you're going to take it, you're going to take control? He mentioned the name of Dermot Connolly, and Dermot Connolly's ghost is hanging over this team at the minute.
Yeah, well, I don't know how much they lack superstars, but, you know, two guys that should be kind of in this team aren't in the team, and Rory O'Carroll and Dermot Connolly are both. For me, Rory O'Carroll is, right now, is kind of the guy that I'd be looking to get in. He's an outstanding fullback. He'd really kind of help them as well back there. Like I was talking to somebody last day, their halfback line is going to be unbelievable come championship. It's still going to be James McCarthy, John Small and Jack McCaffrey. And there probably isn't another half back line like it out there. They've still got a load of all stars in the full back line as well. But I think Rory brings that kind of sheer size and power to that position. I battled with him for a good few years. He's a very good full back. And for me, he's the most important guy I'd be looking to get back. He's back in from New Zealand. He played football. He's ready to go.
What about that point that McGinley was making, basically, that in a moment of crisis, you need somebody who's just going to stand up and take possession of the ball, and he's the one that everybody's looking forward to, everyone is looking for on the team. And at the moment, their attack doesn't really have that focal point. You could say Kieran Kilkenny is that man, but they're very different footballers. Kilkenny's going to get the ball and keep possession, whereas, you know, when Connolly gets it, he's going to try and make something happen.
Yeah, don't underestimate Conn O'Callaghan as well. Like, you know, he's been the guy the last year or two that's just getting the ball and going scoring goals, big goals, when Dublin needs it, to settle them down to start of a game or midway through a game. But look, let's call a spade a spade. Connolly is the man. Connolly is the best forward that this Dublin team have had over the years. And, you know, he is missed. And he's missed for the game as well. He's not just missed for Dublin. He's missed for spectators watching the game, spectators looking at it. You know, you want to see Dermot Connolly on the starting lineup come for Dublin. And I'm sure his teammates going for 5 in a row I know if I was on that Dublin squad, I'd be kind of like going, yeah, come on, Dermot, like, fix whatever, sort out whatever needs to be sorted out. We're going for history here. And everybody else is creeping up a small bit behind us. We're still the best team, but we could do with you.
Yeah, no doubt. What's next?
Topic two is free agency. It's huge in America. It's starting to creep in over here in different sports. But basically that players are kind of signing minimum contracts, looking after themselves, making as much money as they can, and kind of keeping this kind of, who can I jump on board with next? Who's going to win the next championship? Is loyalty dead, Ger?
Yes, it is, and so it should be. Go get paid. That's it. I can't understand why anybody who is a professional sports person, particularly footballers in England, don't let their contracts wind down. If you look at American football, we're just through the first week and a half of free agency there. Some of the mediocre players have now set the market for their position. So you're getting the Trent Brown, the left tackle who's come from the Patriots, is now the highest paid tackle in football, even though he's actually not that good. And this is the weird thing, is that if you're really good, your team locks you down to a long-term contract, you get that safety and you're a little bit conservative about it. So JJ Watt is getting paid about $5 million less than players who are nowhere near as good as him on an annualized basis, because he didn't hit free agency, he didn't hold out, he didn't say I'm going to wait and get my money. And I'm saying that's exactly what everybody should do. It's what all the footballers in England should be looking at what goes on at Arsenal and go, hang on a second, you're okay, you're grand, and now you're going to Juventus and getting paid like one of the best players in the world. The best players don't hit free agency. If Leo Messi hit the free market, he'd be getting paid $50 million. $50 million a year. Why doesn't everybody just do it?
Yeah, look, certainly players' power is more coming into it, but Jesus, we're going to miss out on these kind of one guy teams, and a guy that stayed with a guy like Dirk Nowitzki over in the Dallas Mavericks, who just was signed by the Mavericks, stayed with him his whole career, will be an NBA legend because of it. I think if he hopped around, his legendary status wouldn't be up as where it is. He's just passed Will Chamberlain, the all-time scoring list. You're going to miss out on the rivalries, Jerry. You're going to miss out on them Lakers-Celtics days, the Bulls-Knicks. You're going to lose that, because we can't have a rivalry if guys are jumping teams all the time.
I see your rivalry, and I give you the Miami Heat and how great that was when LeBron was there with his buddies.
Yeah, how great was it with who?
When LeBron went with Dwayne Wade to Miami.
Yeah, but who were they playing?
I don't know. Dirk Nowitzki.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
They were playing Dirk Nowitzki.
Dirk Nowitzki 1 year, somebody else another year. We're missing out on the real rivalries in sport, I think, if we go that way. It's better for the players, but I don't know how good it is for the fans.
Our next slot is called Rugby Slump, but also known as... I'd say after that, or it's too early in the morning for us to use the proper word. So we were thinking about the rugby team and the situation they find themselves in, where everybody thinks that they've gone to shit, basically. You've got some experience of the last round of a league game before a big championship coming up, not going particularly well. Cork in 2014, ringing any bells?
Yeah, Cork, yeah, in 2014, they beat us by like 10 or 11 points in Aztec Park, and we got a goal late on to make that look... you couldn't even call it respectable. It was a horror show from us that day. It was the last game of the league. We'd nothing really to play. We had to go back with our clubs. It was tough. We were getting it in the neck from the fans, and rightly so, because our performance that day was well below par. All the doubters were out. The news articles, Joe Brawley was writing his articles. Kerry were finished. The production line is finished. Certain players were finished. Yeah, you gotta get in together, and you gotta take that on the chin, and you gotta improve, and you gotta work hard, and you gotta go back to the drawing board a bit, and you gotta keep confidence into your management team, your players, and realize that we're a good team here. Like, let them say what they want. We're a good team. I think that's where Ireland are at right now. They have no more games really till we get the few challenge games before the few tests before the World Cup. So they're a bit in limbo now. They got to go back to their clubs, but I think they got to really rally the troops and stick together and stay behind the key players, and they'll fix this, and Ireland will be right there in the World Cup, because they're a very good side. We didn't look like it last day against Wales. Wales jumped on us from the start. You called it, Ger. I didn't think it was going to happen, but they jumped on us. They had a try within 72 seconds, and we were really kind of at sixes and sevens after that.
Can I ask you about the Kerry fans giving it to you in the neck? Did that help you to get better? That's my theory about the Kerry fans, by being so demanding, by demanding off you guys that they're the Real Madrid of the Irish football world, and that actually drives your team on to success.
Well, we wanted it for ourselves. We wanted to win in All-Ireland. We weren't training for that league since November for to put on a show like that and kind of go out with a win for that year. We'd lost Tomás O'Shea, we'd lost Paul Galvin, we'd lost Cullen Cooper, we'd lost Owen Brosnan. We were playing poor in the league. We went in a training camp, we rejuvenated each other, we found belief in each other, we worked hard as a team, and we went down and won the All-Ireland in 14. So, yeah, Ireland can go win this World Cup, they just got to stick together.
Yeah, that's not bad at all, is it?
No.
What's next?
Look, I know we've got Kieran Fitzgerald on, but I just thought, look, just to talk about Corrigan. Just look, we give out about football, and we love to give out about when things are going bad and when rules are in and when changes are being made. But Jesus, to watch Corrigan the last day, their movement, they're so unselfish. Like, if you want a team, if you want a team to try and win something, you show them Corrigan the last day about how unselfish you can be in front of goal on the big day in Croke Park, where club fellas can kind of say, geez, if I get a goal and a few points here, they'll be talking about me forevermore in the parish. Not a touch of it. They're a joy to watch, right, Joe?
Don't they prove that there's nothing wrong with Gaelic football? It's just a mindset that needs to change. And that if you have players who you work with all the time, who you can coach properly and give a sense of ambition to, that actually the rules of the game are totally fine. It's that the conversation around it that needs to change.
Absolutely. We need to all change the conversation to it. And coaches need to really look at what Corrigan were doing. Like, their first goal was almost like a three-man weave, even though Paul Galvin and Aidan O'Mahony don't like the three-man weave. Drill, maybe the drill mightn't be the greatest, but, you know, like, that's what it was written all over. The easy pass for the Corrigan player was out to his right-hand side where they did a two-on-one in front of goal. Instead, he waited for the man coming off his shoulder, changed the direction of the play. The play went left, and at the end of it, the player was back post and knocked it into the net, Gary Sice. So, just a beautiful goal, beautiful movement, beautiful decision making, real team play.
Why do your old buddies hate the three man weave so much? What's the thing you've ever done to them?
I don't know. Maybe it was brought in by a certain coach to train in some time. Maybe we went overboard on the three man weave
and who was that?
And I can't remember because we've been doing it a while, but I think what we used to do as well, we used to go to length of the field with it, and it can get a bit monotonous going to length of the field. It's not really that type of drill. It's supposed to be more snappy than that, but I think the boys might have an issue with going the length of the field more so than the three men weave.
Shots fired, that's whatever coach in the background there. That's getting Jesus. Clipped up and going around the WhatsApp group straight away, Kieran, you know it. Our next bit is trolls. This is a horrific story from Australia where there's an amazing, amazing photograph of an AFL player that gets put up by the AFL on their Twitter stream and gets taken down because because some dickheads can't actually control themselves on social media. And everything that we're talking about over the last number of weeks in terms of the 20 by 20 campaign, this is it set back miles and miles back. And the AFL have to take some responsibility for this. Leave the photograph up. Let everybody see that there are clowns out there, and let's expose those clowns, and let's continue to celebrate greatness wherever we see it, whoever is delivering it.
Absolutely, yeah. Talia Harris, unbelievable photo, serious athleticism. I have two daughters, Jaron. If they're going to go on and play football or basketball at any code, and the relative body is going to put up a picture of them in action, as you said, if these dickheads are going to come in with this kind of stuff, it's reckless. And us as men and people in general have to start calling out these people. And, you know, like these people, like you know, we have inter-county players, the soccer players, they've been bullied online on a regular basis. You know, like, we can have opinions on people, but these people that go online, these trolls that go on and put up this stuff, actually put it out there on their feed. And, you know, everybody else lets them away with it instead of calling them out and saying, hey, man, you're way overboard there. You know, I think we need to get a bit harder on the trolls and actually kind of almost embarrass them into the point of, you know, like, what are you doing here? It's such a terrible act. It's bullying. It's a form of bullying. I talk about it in my basketball camp every year. You know, don't stand for it. But I think we as adults stand for it on WhatsApp groups. We stand for it on Twitter, on social media. Because, you know, will we bother even messing with this fella? I know they don't have many followers, these trolls, but still, what they're saying is an absolute disgrace, and they should be ashamed of themselves, and even their family members should be ashamed of them.
And the AFL for taking the photograph down should be ashamed as well.
Yeah, I think they probably panicked a bit, you know what I mean? They put it back up, they reinstated the photo, they apologised. It was a bad move by them. But you know, it's these fools that are on sitting down on their computer that have never done a stitch in their life that want to call out athletes every day for not performing to their best.
Yourself and Brian Cooper last week had a good idea about giving training to young players coming through, young sports people coming through, having to deal with this on the other side. So if you are a sports person who is a victim of this, actually learning to go, okay, yeah, I need to be able to somehow distance myself from this, because it's not easy. You read it, you kind of find yourself drawn to it.
I'm well used to it, and I spoke with Anna Geary, who were doing the reload at Sean Air Sport together this year, and Anna was saying when she was doing the dancing there was vile stuff coming in with her, and she was trying not to read it, but some of it was hard to deal with. And I was kind of like saying, Anna, you know, these people have done nothing ever, they're just absolute fools, like can you differentiate from that from the real person that wants to talk to you about something? But that's my outlook on it. Like, I can spot the trolls a mile away and never interact with them. It's a waste of time. You know, they have nothing going on. So, yeah, certainly some training for all young sports stars coming through, whether that be from county boards or the FAI or rugby, the rugby union, whatever. But every sport coach should have a bit of training how to deal with trolls.
Our next topic is about something very sad that has led to an outpouring, a national outpouring across the GAA.
Yeah, Kieran O'Connor from Aheda and Cork. He's dealt with cancer before and dealt with it again, and now has it back for a third time. And it's a tough one for him to be dealing with again for the third time. And I think, you know, there's a GoFundMe page out there that raised a lot of money. The GAA, again, you know, we give out about the GAA. We talked about it earlier on about Cora Finn, but this is even more what the GAA is about. It's about the community coming together. I met one of Kieran's friends out in Dubai at the Irish Open this year, and he was a small bit upset, and he came up to me kind of saying that, you know, that he'd got the news that Kieran had got it back for the third time. And, you know, I could tell he was visibly shaken by it. And, you know, this is a great Cork footballer. I battled him, never really came across him too much. He was kind of more busy running around, hanging off of Gooch and Declan Sullivan. But, like, you know, just a warrior for Cork. Won his All-Ireland in 2010. was always there for the cause. And, you know, I think the community have really got behind him from Ireland, the GAA community, but especially his Graham Kenty wrote a terrific piece, if you haven't read it in the Examiner. It really kind of shows the bond that Cork team had and that they do anything for their guy. But yeah, if you haven't contributed to the GoFundMe page for Kieran and his family yet, I'd be suggesting to do so, because it's a very worthy cause, and we're trying our best to get him every support to try and help him with his illness and help his family too.
I think the Graham County piece was kind of the catalyst for the whole country beginning to understand exactly what was going on, and it kind of does show the power of your former teammates, and also I guess the power of being open and talking about things as well. A lot of people might kind of try and hide away, but the right thing to do when you need help is to ask for help.
Yeah, I know, yeah, and in fairness to the, you know, there's, you know, I see Armagh put up a tweet last night that they're taking all their funds from their halftime raffle and sending it down to the Kieran O'Connor Fund, and also Kerry did it at the league game against Mayo last week. And I think it's a real nice thing to do, and I think I'd say every county should be really at it on the last weekend of the league and try and generate as much as we can for the fund. And yeah, look, If you haven't donated yet, try and get on it if you can, because it's so important for him and his family.
And we'll tweet the link to the GoFundMe page. It's GoFundMe.com/friends-of-Kieran. If you, as I said, we'll tweet the link to that. So if you can get on our Twitter, we'll share that as well. We want to move on to the new dynasty that's so now official. The Cora Finn victory means that they are officially one of the best club football teams of all time. And I'm delighted to say Kieran Fitzgerald is with us this morning. Kieran, I think it was reported as you're the first person ever to be cheered off who was sent off in a match at Croker. So that must have been a pretty unusual and kind of sweet feeling nonetheless.
Yeah, thanks, guys. I was just, my mother was mortified. So she was, yeah, look, it was an unusual situation. But like, as a club player, you know, a day like last Sunday was really special. And, you know, talking to Kieran there, and where he playing with Kerry for us to play against the likes of Dr. Croakton in All-Ireland Club Final, and obviously for things to go so well for us on the day, like, it's an amazing feeling, and it's something as a club we always dreamed about. So you know, like, we're absolutely delighted down here in Galway, and you know, we realised it's a big thing, you know. So we'll enjoy it.
Do enjoy it, Kieran, because, you know, we were waxing lyrical a moment ago there, one of the points about the forwards and the goal, but, you know, going in there at full back at 38 years of age and leading your defence, keeping that Croke's forward line quiet, because I've gone up against them and they've buried us and run rings around us at times. What was your main focus as a defensive unit going into the game?
Well, we had played them 2 years ago, Kieran, down in the Gaelic ground, and we got an absolute run around that day. And like, so we had prepared as well as we've ever done for these boys. And, you know, Kieran O'Leary, they're full forward. I've met him a few times, and you obviously played in his counter triple with him. What a super player. And they were just so slick in the way they played football. And obviously it's something that we tried to do ourselves in our forward unit. There was loads of similarities. So, like, for our defence for the last few weeks, I suppose we got good preparation in marking the likes of Martin Fryer and Ian Burke, and Gary Sykes. So we were well prepped for it. But you know, obviously on an Ireland final day is the day to do it. So, like, usually relieved that we got over the line. But yeah, very weary of the guys you spoke about there, Tommy Brosnan and, you know, Micheál Burns. They're all super players.
Was it a cutting out the supply chain, or was it just getting tighter from that game 2 years ago?
It was cutting out the supply, really, Kieran. You know, as Tomás said before, hammer the hammer and put a high press on and try and go at it that way. We knew going up, neither team was going to go defensive on it, and Carfin were never going to play like that either. So it was really how we were going to defend it was put as much pressure out the field as possible. And, you know, the boys outfield, Dahi Burke and Ronan Speed out the middle, and even our half-back line were immense at that, and, you know, made our job inside a small bit easier, you know. But the boys are so dangerous inside, you always have to be on guard.
Is there significant turnover in the makeup of the team from the first Carfin team that won the All-Ireland in the 2014-2015 season, or is it largely the same group of players?
No, we've lost a few and gained a few. From the 15 team, we had Gary Delaney there, and we had Greg Higgins. Both guys would have played for Galway at various stages. It's probably, off the top of my head, I'd say it's probably changed maybe four or five players, but we've been fortunate enough, you know, we've been able to add some super young players in there. Obviously, Kieran Malloy and Dylan Wall, Dylan McHugh. Colin Brady came on as a sub there, Dylan Canny. These guys have been really pushing, and, you know, we've been lucky enough that Conor Cunningham, another guy there, we've been lucky enough that these guys have come in and have been really fighting for places and not happy to be on the bench. So I'd say off the top of my head, maybe four or five from the 15 team, but that goes down to a good underage structure in the club at the minute.
Well, I was going to ask, like, what the hell happened? Because, you know, I think you're doing this 21, 22 years as a senior, and you won your first club All-Ireland back in 98, and you were the first team from the West to do it at that point. It seems like something happened in the club 25, 30 years ago that has just turned you into a powerhouse.
Well, I suppose in 98, like, Carrigan were the first kind of club, or first club team from Connacht to win in All-Ireland, and, you know, that gave, for us as young guys, great inspiration. A guy that's been mentioned numerous times, and his son is involved in management with us at the minute, David Morris, his father Frank Morris, and a number of guys put in huge work at underage and developed great structures. There's a good schools competition in Carrigan, it's Raftery Cup, named after the Rafteries in Carrigan, and, like, that provides huge talent to the club going forward. Highly competitive competition, and you know, like, there's just so much emphasis on coaching at underage, and it thankfully has worked out for us at a grade down the road.
Kieran, we were talking last week here, myself and Jar and Shot Clock, about everybody wants to retire everybody in the GAA. You're 38, You were absolutely outstanding, powering forward the last day, marking Kieran O'Leary, powering up the pitch every time I saw you. So we're going to practice what we preach. I presume you're going to stay on and have a go at this three in a row All-Ireland clubs, because you're certainly in serious shape. So we hope you stay on and go for it.
Yeah, I haven't even thought about it much yet. But no, look.
You're not allowed to retire on shot clock. You're not allowed to retire. You've just got to go again. Look, that's what we're big on, keeping guys going. We're the opposite of the general GA public.
Yeah, I love my football, and playing with these guys, it is even to think about something like that, it is difficult and does make me uncomfortable, because I've been playing football no more than yourself, and it's been part of my life for so long. Like, a lot of thanks has to go down to the management team in Carrifin, and they look after me so well. The club, all the way through the years, has looked after me so well. They give me time off, they let me pick and choose my sessions as much as possible, and you know, it has stood to me that you're not being flogged every night of the week, that they give you a little bit of time off. But
enjoy the winter, boy, and settle up again in January or February, all right?
I have one last question for you. A couple of Kieran's ex intercounty teammates want to ban the three-man weave. Tommy here reckons that the three-man weave was the hallmark of your wonder goal in Croker the other day. Is this true? Is this something you guys practice, or was that actually nothing to do with three-man weave at all?
We were actually laughing and training during the week when the three-man weave in the build-up to the club final, I don't know, was it Aidan O'Mahony or somebody who had spoke about the three-man weave on Twitter, and we were laughing and training going that the three-man weave is out, you know. But some of the scores last Sunday, I suppose the basis of it came from the three-man weave. And you know, three-man weave, as Kieran said earlier on, if you're doing it the length of the pitch, I can't imagine it is too much fun. But there's a lot of emphasis on, like, you know, spatial awareness and movement and dragging players left and right. And I suppose we have done a fair few three-man weaves in our day now. So yeah, look, it worked for us.
It's such a good stat. Good stuff.
They're a basketball team, Jared. They're a basketball team.
In the best possible way, I presume you mean.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well done, Kieran.
Kieran, enjoy whatever happens next. Boy. Thanks a million. Speaking of intercounty, I know I'm trying to goad you into coming back for Kerry himself and Dahi Burke. Kerry could do worse than giving those two lads a ring. Or Dublin, sorry. Kevin Walsh could do worse than giving those two lads a call and saying, come on in for the summer. We can baby you through a few training sessions. You can sit this one out, have a little rub.
Absolutely. You look at all options when you're Galway and you're going to try and win in All-Ireland. Certainly, whatever core Finn players are going to bring in aren't going to let the team down, and they're going to only add confidence, and they're going to add skill and decision-making to that already very strong Galway squad. So, yeah. You wouldn't mind being in Kevin Walsh's position right now.
2 minutes of predictions. We're going to start this with the amazing news that you tipped 12-1 winner last week in Rory McIlroy. That was a good shout, Kieran. Well done.
Yeah, we were giving out to me about the pain and my stomach was indigestion. I felt Rory was going to come good last week, and yeah, I was delighted. And yeah, but my other predictions on the prediction section weren't great. You had me outnumbered there, but I went bold with McIlroy. We put it in one of our slots, and yeah, it was good. Great to see him back winning, and winning in the way that we were both talking about, that he was struggling with. Was a Sunday with 8 or 9 people that were there ready to win. McIlroy stood it out in the back nine.
Yeah, that's exactly what he needed to do. Does that mean there's a major in, do you feel that in the pit of your stomach point this year?
Well, yeah, well, you talked about the main one, Jaron. That's Augusta, the one he threw away, and I feel like he's coming for that crown. He putted okay the last day. He didn't even putt great. And if this kid starts putting well, it's all over.
So this week's predictions, Ireland against Gibraltar, in Gibraltar. What do you think is going to happen here?
How many goals? That's the question.
Three, I think. Three. We never score more than three, no matter what happens. We could kill you. We could batter you. We'll score three. We could be not playing too well. Might sneak a third sometimes.
First game under Mick McCarthy, I'm going with 5.
That would be happy. We would take that.
We would take it.
Okay, so Galway against Tyrone. This Tyrone team are the real deal. What's going to happen here?
It's a tough one. It's down in Healy Park. Tyrone have to win to make a league final. you know, it's going to be a bit of a, it's going to be a real kind of dogged affair. I'm going to go with Tyrone in a really tight one.
Yeah, unfortunately, I agree with you. I think Tyrone are definitely, they're on a roll and they're going to hopefully set up a meeting against this Kerry team. And that would be a good game. That would be a game to get the neutrals pretty interested, I think. Last one, couple of quick ones here. Meath against Fermanagh. Meath should go up, but if Fermanagh win by 10 and Donegal beat Kildare by 7, Meath won't go up on scoring difference.
Meath are going up. Meath are going to win in 11 and thing. And just before we go, it's Down Syndrome Day, Jaron. Rock the socks.
Odd socks.
Rock the socks. Rock the socks for Down Syndrome Day. Anybody out there, support a great charity.
Come on, Kieran. We'll see you next week. Thanks a million.
All right, Jaron. You're the man.
That's this week's Shot Clock. You can get the whole thing. We're on youtube.com/offtheball. Offtheball.com is actually the best place to get all our stuff. You can click on the videos there. You can listen to this show anytime we go live. A little thing will pop up on your browser and go, ooh, Off the Ball is live now, would you like to watch? And you just click yes, and everybody's happy. You get some top quality sports content delivered right in your earballs and eyeballs for nothing. What more could you want from life? So what's next? Capped 3 times by Gibraltar. He's a Gibraltar legend. It's Danny Higginbotham, former Stoke City star, ex-Man United. Danny Higginbotham spoke to the show last night with Joe and Kev to talk about what Ireland can expect when they land in Spain this week.
I saw a piece you wrote a couple of years ago about that first game against Slovakia, this huge occasion, and it was played over the border in Faro, I think.
Yes.
No grass pitches in Gibraltar, so even most of the players didn't have boots with studs.
No, we actually went for a walk a couple of days before the game. We went for a walk around the city that they had there, and I got talking to a few of the players, and some of the players like dashed off to a sports shop, and I asked the question, what are they going for? You got all the training kit and everything. They went, we don't have boots. And I was like, well, what do you mean? Yeah, we don't play on grass, and it's something that, you know, it's something that we take for granted. But over there, like I say, they have the one main pitch, which is AstroTurf. They have a little bit of AstroTurf on the back of that as well, where they can train. But the majority of the time, I said to them, because of the lack of pitches here, what do you spend the large majority of your training sessions doing when obviously your associated time is finished? And they said, well, we do a lot of fitness training, whether it be running up the rock or just other things to keep themselves fit, because they haven't got the facilities to play football. And that's why they had been up until recently, I don't know whether it's still going ahead, to move to a place called Europa Point, which is actually where the cricket pitches at the moment. So the idea was to get, I think, a 10,000-12,000 seat stadium there, and that was something that's been in the pipeline for a while, and hopefully that can still carry on, because there's no doubt about it, they do need something like that. They need a bigger stadium, and obviously the facilities aren't the greatest, and the pitch itself as well.
Yeah, Danny Higginbotham, very thoughtful guy, good pundit, good career ahead of himself as a pundit.
Yeah, for sure, he's really good, and when you talk about Gibraltar footballers, there's only one that really comes to mind. He's head and shoulders above the rest, which is the biggest compliment you can pay to Danny Higginbotham.
Wow, damning with faint praise, I believe they call that specifically on. So I predict 3-0, Kieran Donnelly's predicting 5-0. Are you like, what are you saying?
What was the score last time we played Gibraltar? It was like, we ratcheted up the goals, but granted, we had Robbie Keane in the team, if I'm not mistaken. So
did, yeah.
It's different. Like, Robbie Keane was the king. It's like,
running up the score.
With Robbie Keane in the team, we'd be talking about, you know, Ireland and 6 points. Let's look ahead to the next round of fixtures, if it was going to this week. But maybe Sean Maguire can become that. It all depends on whether or not he's actually made that leap and is ready to kind of lead the line from an Irish perspective. If he is, I could just go in the middle and go for 4, but I'm going to go with Donaghy and go for 5.
Okay, not like 6 or 7. 9-0? 9-0 win for us?
I think 5 is a good number.
What if they score? What if it's a nil all? Sack mix straight away?
Yes.
All right, that's it. Done deal. Tommy Walsh, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Well, lads, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. A smaller photograph over your shoulder this week. Which one's this?
Yeah, so this is the, I suppose, you were talking to Kieran Fitzgerald a few minutes ago. It's really the time for the Club All-Ireland champions at the moment. So we had Ballyhale last week in the hurling, but the week before we had Slaughtneil. An incredible club there. They're able to dominate the hurling, the Gaelic football, and now the Camogie as well. Now, they've done very well in Ulster and in Derry with the hurling and the Gaelic football. But it's really the Camogie is where they seem to be dominating on the All-Ireland, on the national stage. they won their third Club All-Ireland in a row, which to me and I suppose to everyone is an amazing achievement, really, especially when it comes from, you know, a hurling club up in Derry, which wouldn't be known as a, you know, a hurling stronghold. Usually they come from the Corks and maybe the Tipperary's, the Kilkenny's, the Galway's in the Camogie. So I thought it was incredible, really, to do the third All-Ireland in a row. And they're kind of backed by a load of sisters, the Cassidy's, and there's Mellons. And now, one interesting point as well is we've heard the criticism going down Offaly's way, Ger, the last few weeks, and hurling and this and that. But the lady that won two Man of the Matches in a row in last year's All-Ireland and this year's All-Ireland, first lot need, was a girl from Offaly, from Ballyskinnock, Tina Hannan. So she went up there. I think she married one of the lads up there in Slotneil, and she's won two Player of the Matches and two All-Irelands in a row, which is, you know, another incredible achievement. So there's so many different stories up there in Slotneil, and I know on their jerseys they have the Irish saying, "Go Corla Cala, no strength without unity," and just really kind of promote the Irish culture. And I think it's a fitting kind of week, I suppose, when we're speaking about All-Ireland Club champions, maybe to mention them.
Yeah, that's the Tina there picking up her Player of the Match award from the All-Ireland final as well. So a pretty amazing story when you think about Slotneil. We should, now that you mentioned Ballyhale as well, talk a bit about them. In terms of cutting your teeth to lay down your credentials as the next manager for an inter-county team, winning a Club All-Ireland in any other county in the country counts as a pretty good CV. So not a bad start to Henry Shefflin's managerial career.
Yeah, he's amazing, really, to be able to do what he's done. And the current structures, you know, kind of a background behind the story as well, Ger, is, you know, you might be... Everyone that would have seen the Ballyhale team last week would say, well, listen, that he has brilliant players at his disposal. But it takes a certain manager and a certain management team to get the best out of them on the biggest day and all. And we heard from Kieran there that the work that goes into Cara Finn to get them right for the big day. And it's the same for Ballyhale. But in the current structure in the Kilkenny Championship, Chair, no team. So at the top, there's two groups of six. And the top two teams are seeded in for the quarterfinals. They skip the first round of the championship. So this has been the structure in Kilkenny for the last 20, 30 years. No team that has come from the first round has ever won the county final, as far as my homework serves me. And Ballyhale were in the first round this year. So we're all saying, well, listen, you know, Ballyhale, people are tipping them they could potentially win the county final. And then this statistic is drawn up. Well, no team has ever done it in 20 or 30 years. So, you know, they had a kind of a up and down kind of league championship in Kilkenny, but once the knockout started, on they went, and they won most matches, bar the semi-final where they needed a last-minute goal against Castle Comer. They dominated most matches.
The other thing is that clubs are difficult. Sometimes managing your own club can be far more difficult than actually managing a bunch of people from different places, because everybody knows you, everybody knows there are different families, and just being able to make sure that team plays together and is out playing for each other as opposed to the individuals or their family. It's like, you know, politics at club level are far more difficult sometimes to navigate than they are at inter-county level, and Henry's managed that straight off the bat. He does look like he has everything you would want in a potential manager at inter-county level.
Yeah, well, his skill in everything he does and his dedication to go hand in hand, and that equally goes to his management styles. So I'm sure he's able to put his arm around the guy, and he's able to maybe, you know, stand off him as well and make sure that he doesn't believe that he has a certain God-given right to be on the team. And that's probably the skill that he has. And I know he learned a lot from the league, including the league championship last year, and how to prepare the team. And I suppose with the amount of matches and say that are played maybe off peak, we'll say, not in the real intensity of championship, you probably learn maybe how to deal with lads in a less intensified way. So you probably learned a lot in the first couple of months in how to deal with these guys. And it definitely paid dividends in the end, because in the real big matches, Gerard, these guys played at their best. And whether you've very good players or whether you've only ordinary players, that's a very difficult thing to do. And on the biggest day of all, and that wasn't just the All-Ireland final, they had a big match against Ballygunner against different tactics. We'll say Ballygunner, you know, have dominated the Waterford Club Championship. They've been very good at Munster without winning it until this year, but have knocked out big teams, including Turles Arsfields. And they play a different style, a kind of a more sharp passing running game. So they had to adopt adapt, we'll say, for that style, and they did that and won then in kind of a bad conditions in the end. But I thought it was interesting, TJ Reid's comments after the final as well, Ger, in that he said, you know, he knows the modern game. So the modern game isn't just get the ball and lump it up. It's also not going back and playing sweeper for 70 minutes. You have to be able to play both styles. And Ballyhale looked like they did that Sunday. When they had to go the sharp passing route, they done it, which was very... We've seen it for one of the Mullins, Patrick Mullins, point in the second half. Owen Reid got the ball in the corner. Short little pass out, I think it was to TJ. Then he did another 10-yard pass across the centre. And Patrick Mullin, about 65 yards out, with a guy just about to block him, got away the shot quick enough to put over the bar. And then we've seen in the first half, I suppose, the long balls that was going into Colin Fenley. So they were able to mix and match there.
Yeah, so you're saying that a Kilkenny man does do tactics.
Well, a Kilkenny man has always done tactics. Like, I know that... I suppose the perception is that Brian Coley doesn't do tactics and his management team, but has been part of his management team, or has been part of his team, we'll say, and that for 10 or 15 years. It mightn't be called tactics, but we definitely do something.
Here, Colin Fenley's finish was as good as I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I suppose anyone that can remember the 94 All-Ireland year when Damien Quigley, Limerick played Offaly, and Damien Quigley had an unbelievable first half. He really, really went well. I think he was on Shane McGuckie in that day, and he was brilliant. Shane McGuckie was tough, tight, kind of a tight cornerback, but the ball went in behind him. It was on the other side of the goal, down on the Hill 16 end. He dived full length and flicked the ball and changed the direction completely to the far corner. And Colin Fenley did something similar, but on the other side of the post. And it was an amazing skill, and we don't expect Colin Fenley to do that. He's mainly a direct player, get the ball, go past his man and maybe finish it, use his power and speed. But this was definitely maybe, I suppose, like when he was on the Kenny panel first, I know he put an awful lot of work into the ball alleys. And maybe all that work he did for a few years paid off maybe on the biggest day and all, when his eye was in and his touch was in for that quality finish.
Yeah, what does that spell for Kilkenny now, I wonder? Like, I mean, you're looking around at that finish and you're thinking to yourself, geez, who are like some of the best, the sharpest forwards around the intercounty game at the moment? Like, it was an unbelievable finish, Tommy. You must be kind of salivating at the prospect of getting the Ballyhale lads into the intercounty setup again.
We are all one, yeah. And I suppose the important thing is that you can easily get carried away now and say, right, Colin Fenley, 2-4 in a club All-Ireland. Mm. Anytime the ball came into him, he looked like he was going to do damage. So you go the direct route all the time. But I think that then plays into the opposition hands, because they'll know what to do with Colin. They'll just swarm him. So you have to, I think, mix and match. And you play sharp balls, you play long balls. Keep the opposition guessing. So if they do that, well, then I think that's the best way of getting the best out of Colin Fenley. Well, it's definitely, I think, serious for the belief now. You can imagine if you're on the Kenny panel, did it okay in the league. You know, they're in most matches until the end. Now you have, I was kind of counting up, I think you have four players that would probably come into the team. You have Joey Holden, TJ Reid, Colin Fenley and Adrian Mullen. And then you have one or two more guys, like Darren Mullen maybe and Richie Reid maybe will be there on the fringes trying to get on with the potential of getting on the team. So you know, that's a serious, like, say if you had four guys, that's nearly a third of the team. And they're after winning the club All-Ireland quite handsomely. So I think it's definitely positive for Kilkenny.
We speak about a manager cutting his teeth at club level. One fella who's definitely done that is Matty Kenny. And the Dubs are going fairly well, Tommy, that big win over Tipperary last weekend. And they're up against Limerick now this weekend in the league semi-final. Is there a sense, it's been written about in a couple of papers this morning, that this is the continuation of the job that Pat Gilroy was doing last year? And really, it's actually no big shock to see Dublin make this big progression again this year.
Yeah, it's not a big shock, but it's still very difficult to do, to make that huge leap. I think you mentioned a very good coach and a very good manager in Pat Gilroy. I think it's important to note on two teams, both Waterford and Dublin, the foundations that are put into a team are so important. Derek McGrath put in huge foundations in developing a culture down in Waterford, in developing a spirit and a unity and a professionalism. And Pat Gilroy has done the very, very same thing in Dublin. And you will often find a manager putting in huge work for 2 or 3 years, really putting in the donkey work. And then another manager comes in and builds on that then and potentially wins a county final or an All-Ireland. And I think for Matty Kenny, what I suppose will serve the Dublin players well and the Dublin, panel well is that Matty Kenny is coming in after winning two club All-Irelands. So they know this guy can get the job done. They know he can get a team over the line. He did very well as a coach with Galway as well. So he's come in. But just as important for that, I think, Owen, is that he's brought in a good few cooler players. So you've, you know, Darragh O'Connell is in. I don't think he was in for a number of years. And a few more cooler players are, you know, brilliant. And would be them probably the main players on this Dublin team going forward. So I think it's all positive for Dublin. What happened last weekend against Dublin? I think they sent out a message, not just to the public, but to themselves. Dublin or Tipperary have always been kind of the bogey team, I felt, for Dublin. They're always able to beat them quite convincingly. Even when Dublin were going well, they might beat them by 10-plus points. But that was, and that could have happened last weekend, but it didn't. And they kept nipping up the whole game. It was a high-scoring game. I think it was 121 to 23 points or something similar to that. So they were able to go nipping up with Tipperary for the whole game. And that will serve them well regardless of confidence levels going forward.
Tommy, we've been talking about the Hurling League the whole way along and kind of how it's lost its shine given how good the Championship is and everybody is kind of keeping their powder dry a good bit. But it's actually worked out really well in that a lot of the best players have been finding good form. You think Austin Gleeson, you think Joe Canning, that now we can start thinking, actually, everybody seems to be in a pretty good place. There's a little bit of uncertainty about where Kilkenny and Cork are, but, you know, we talked about what Kilkenny are going to get back, and Cork have won the last 2 months of titles, so they're going to be grand. It's going to be fine for them. We don't need to worry about them. It is all setting up nicely, particularly with some of the superstar players playing really well.
Yeah, it is, Ger. Like Joe Canning, you mentioned Joe, 15 points last weekend. Like, it's been well publicised now. He came out and said to the management, I want to play every league game. I don't just want to be minded and rested and looked after until the championship. I want to go out and play every game and, I suppose, pick up form that way. And he has done just that. Now, the one thing I've noticed about Joe playing centre forward, usually he's kind of like the conductor of the orchestra. He's like the quarterback in American football. He gets the ball and he sprays it around. He has took on players in the last two matches that I have seen. And the pace and power he has, he's unstoppable when he actually gets it into his head. I'm going to go and sprint at 100 miles an hour. And he set up a goal and probably scored. He definitely set up a goal or two the last 2 days. Really, really tough ones where he had to get past three or four players. So I would like to see him continue that in the championship and take his game to the next level again. Don't just settle to be the guy that sprays around the passes. Take on players from centre forward, burst through, set up a goal, score a goal. And I think he's after adding that to his game in this league. You mentioned Austin Gleeson. Yeah, and you know, there's a lot about talk about giving the free roll. I wouldn't agree with that. You know, I'd like to see him playing wing back and let him settle in a position. If he's in the game, he's in the game. If he's not, at least he's minded a man. And I thought he was brilliant again last weekend. And just goes to show the potential that Waterford have in their players. He scored 5 points from play. Parvo Matney scored 5 points from play. So, yeah, there's a lot of teams and they're coming right at the right time.
And Park Fanning's been getting a lot of praise for a more direct style, Tommy.
Park Fanning is getting a lot of praise. And I mentioned Derek McGrath. It's very important that this doesn't just happen overnight. So the culture, the spirit, the setup, the foundation has been laid by Derek McGrath and the management team before that. What Park Fanning's adding then is something different. I've often spoke about the suffering, I think, that the forwards go through when they're left up there, maybe 4 versus 6 or 5 versus 6. If you don't win that ball first, the first ball that comes in, the primary ball, when it breaks, very difficult to do it, especially in the modern game, and the sweepers, they're so onto it, they know the game inside and out at this stage. So if the ball breaks at all, you have one or two sweepers breaking onto it. Towards, I think, now he is mixing and matching. Against Galway 2 games ago, I did notice they still only had 2 forwards in, the 2 Bash brothers, as I call them, the Bennett boys. They were inside causing havoc, but it was only the 2 of them inside. Towards the last day, they definitely had most of the time, I think it could have been Tommy Ryan or one of the Watford players who was in there. They definitely had 3 players, I suppose, up for most of the game the last time. So I think it is about mixing and matching. But what you're seeing is more free scoring from their inside forward line. So we always saw the scoring from out the field because there were support playing that on. But now it's coming from the inside line, like Shane Bennett and Stephen Bennett. They're hurling absolutely out of their skins. And they're, you know, no defender wants to be one-on-one with these guys. So I would love to see him continue with that and try and get them up in 1-on-1 versus 1v1 battles.
One last point, Tommy. Cork and Kilkenny, it's been announced, will play a challenge in Páirc Rinn next Wednesday, the 27th of March at 7:30. Tickets are a tenner for adults and a fiver for concessions, and available through Centre and Super Value stores, but also on the night as well. This is all to try and raise some money for Kieran O'Connor. We talked a little bit about this earlier on with Kieran Donaghy, but it is important that the GAA puts its best foot forward and does rally around whenever one of their own needs it.
Yeah, Gerard, and very important that you said that, because I think it's definitely the case right around the country. I think when any suffering or any kind of tragedy happens in a club, in a community, one of the first groups to get behind it is the local GAA, and it's the same on the national stage. So I'm delighted to hear that Kilkenny and Cork, because I know Kilkenny wouldn't be known for playing challenge games this time of year. So it's great to see, listen, you know what, we'll put that aside, we'll get out and support a good cause. Kieran and his family, great GAA ambassadors, and he's been great for the GAA over his career and that, and support guys when they need support. And so I think very important, and well done to all involved.
Tommy, great stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys. Best of luck.
It's Tommy Walsh with us this morning, whetting our appetites ahead of the league semi-finals. But also, I think, kind of the phony war is over. It's time for us to start looking forward to all of the best players being available for the summer, all of the best teams being good at the same time. This never happens in any sport.
Mm. Why? Like, are you saying that in comparison to last year? Or?
Never. Never happens that you get like the best players playing, everybody playing well.
Yeah, it certainly seems encouraging from that perspective. We will get let down by somebody.
No, it's fine now. So we can look forward to it.
I don't know who's going to be, but...
Darren, like, bring some positivity. How are you?
It's bright out when I wake up now.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
That's a game changer.
Until next week when they move the clocks forward and you lose it.
I know. But we're getting rid of that, though. Well, daylight savings, thing in the
well,
past.
Maybe now that the Brits are out of Europe, we'll be able to do stuff like that. Like, get that done. Yeah, grand.
Which do you prefer? Because we're going to have to stick with one either way.
Early brightness in the summer.
Okay.
It matters
more.
When we were kids, we were told it was to do with the farmers being able to work late in the summertime. But just get up for an hour early and work an hour early. No, it's better to work in the morning than work at night. No.
But what about the confused cows that the farmers are dealing with? You got to think about them and all of this as well.
It's for cutting the field, not the cows.
Okay, fair enough.
You're meant to be from like a farmland owner.
That's an absolutely disgusting thing to say. Is everybody outside of the pale a farmland person to you?
No, just as far south as you are, everyone is on the farm.
Fair enough. I do live inside a farm.
Of course you do.
Like,
there's an educated guess.
So do I. I mean,
yeah, I've never even seen a farm.
Have you not?
Of course I've seen a farm.
Do you have a farm? Really, though? You probably haven't, have you?
I have, yeah.
What type of farm?
A Christmas tree farm.
Yeah, we're just saying, like, have you ever touched a cow? Not in the zoo.
They don't have cows in the zoo.
They do.
They
do in the family farm.
The little farm, yeah. In the zoo.
Really?
Yeah.
Who goes there? The little country kids?
Well,
all the city kids, of course.
Oh, the city kids want to actually see the lions and the tigers.
Well, they've seen them a million times because they go all the time. So it's all ahead of you, Darren. That's all I'll say. Yeah, it's all ahead of you.
Yeah. There's something very unappealing about going.
The pigs get great fanfare.
In
the zoo, yeah. The pigs, they're very cute.
I look forward to your trip to the zoo for OTBAM.
We were out at Newbridge House, which is a beautiful facility in the north, Sylvan North countryside. And, anytime you ever hear somebody talking smack about pigs, somebody will always pipe up, well, pigs are very clean animals. You know, they don't actually like living in their own filth at all. Happy as a pig and shit is the phrase, right? I didn't realise it was like happy as a pig eating their own shit. My 3-year-old standing there like holding court about pigs because he loves pigs, and like a crowd gathers around, so I'm like, okay, Grand, I better go back over here and see it. And he's like, look, he's eating his own poo.
Oh, no.
And he was literally, he was a Vietnamese potbelly pig eating his own shit again and again and again and again. It wasn't just once, it was like clearly a thing that they do all the time.
So that's what the phrase means.
Well, I mean, it does now. When the scales fall from your eyes, you realise that actually, oh, it's a snack.
Or maybe that was just like a particularly messed up pig.
Like a psychologically scarred from being...
A pig with mad cow disease.
There is no mad cow disease in North Carolina.
That's lifeless against that pig.
And people wonder why I'm not rushing out to see these farms.
You've never been to a farm.
I've been to a Christmas tree farm.
That's not a farm. That's a forest.
No, it's a farm. It's a man who has a big field load of Christmas trees and then he sells them near Christmas. It was very surreal because I was there in like May time and just a load of Christmas trees.
Have you ever seen pigs or sheep or goats or cows in a farm?
I went to that farm up in Dundrum Airfield.
Oh yeah,
that has a few. There's a few chickens.
Did you ever milk a cow?
No, of course I've never milked a cow.
What do you mean? Of course.
Have you milked a cow?
Yeah, yeah.
How? Why? When?
Because there was like, when I was a kid, you'd be going out to your, a visit would be arranged to a local farm, and you would go out and they would show you how it works, and then they'd be like, "Ah, oh, we don't do that anymore. There's a machine here." And you'd go, yeah. Ah, okay.
I was about to say that the idea, like, do you probably think that people still milk cows using their hands, their bare hands?
Well, I mean, they do.
Hands on the udder.
I'm not sure if I'm being tricked here into saying something.
No, like, I mean, I think, yeah, when we ask you, have you ever milked a cow, you probably think, no, I've never kind of, like, pulled on the paps of a cow, but really, it's actually a machine.
Okay, well, I'm learning
just
a lot.
Just a bit of information.
Yeah, but, like, it wasn't something we were usually interested in our class. Because not many of us were going to pursue a career in farming in a Dublin city centre school.
Where does your food come from, though? That's the thing. It doesn't come wrapped in cellophane.
Yeah, but I'm not going to demarcate a farmer by taking his job by moving to the country.
Well, you know, I mean, it might be the only place that we can all afford to live. And have you ever held a lamb?
No, I've never held a lamb.
No snuggly warm...
Like, when does the opportunity come to hold a lamb?
Well, they organise it.
You have to seek it out.
There's farms in Meath, school trips. It's better than, like, whatever the... I don't know, we used to go to caves.
You went to Clara Lara. Clara Lara was a great school for
me. Yeah, Clara.
Yeah, let's draw the discreet veil over that.
Yeah, I used to feed lambs with an actual milk bottle. I'm not sure was that how you're supposed to do it, because my grandmother used to have lambs. And I used to just rock up with a milk bottle and feed the lambs with my milk.
I petted a duck once. That was my girlfriend's granny keeps ducks.
All right.
So I touched one of her ducks. But that's probably the extent of my my agricultural experience. Ducks and Christmas trees. We do the sports roundup?
Yeah.
Yeah. The FAI say they've written to the Office of the Director of Corporate Enforcement. They're making efforts to further clarify the loan received from Chief Executive John Delaney. Publicly, they've yet to address a number of concerns raised about this loan. Irish football's governing body say they have privately responded to Sport Ireland's request for clarification on a €100,000 payment. They say it was used to aid a short-term cash flow problem. The Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has described the arrangement as unusual. Matt Doherty is confident he can replicate his sparkling club form for the Republic of Ireland. The talented defender was recently named in Sky Sports' predicted team of the season. They reckon he'll make the cut. Wolves are in the FA Cup semi-finals and they're fighting for a top seven finish in the Premier League and hoping maybe even to sneak a European place for next season. Doherty feels his form bodes well for Ireland.
I just think I'm good enough. I didn't start the season too well. I've got myself a lot fitter, which probably helps also. Than like even fitter than last season, and even though I was pretty fit last season. So no, I just think that I've been able to adapt, and confidence is everything. I'm super confident at the moment. Every time I go out and play, I feel great when I'm playing. Obviously, I know at times that changes during the season, but right now, I mean, I'm probably never playing better than I am now, and my confidence is sky high.
Now, France international Paul Pogba has honoured his World Cup winning teammates by giving them some bling. Let's have a look at the rings. The Manchester United midfielder commissioned and paid for the jewellery off his own back to commemorate their famous victory in Russia. Antoine Griezmann has helped Pogba with the ring's design, which features the French national team logo and the words World Champions. The boxes for the rings are personalised, while the ring itself includes each player's name and shirt number. The Super Bowl style rings reportedly cost in the region of €40,000 each. Let's have a look at what they look like.
€40,000 each. Wow. How many... 23, 40,
800 900, grand. 920,000.
Wow. Jesus.
Just under a million.
That's what that brand spanking new Real Madrid contract does for you.
Is it two weeks' wages, 3 weeks' wages? Is that what it is, 2 weeks' wages?
Is it tacky or classy, the rings?
I like rings as a thing, I think.
The trinket, too.
Like, I mean, it's obviously tacky, but that doesn't necessarily mean that... you know, a bit of tack in your life isn't the worst thing, is it?
Like, do people wear their Super Bowl rings? Like, would you wear it in your daily life?
No, not in your daily life. You would wear it to, like, when you're appearing on TV.
Big events.
Yeah, you would wear it to reunions and stuff like that.
Was there not a commemorative ring done for some GAA team last year?
Was there?
Really?
Did Kerry do it?
It's not a very Irish thing, is it?
Miners?
No, at, like, something rings a bell. I'm sure somebody would be able to inform us. There was definitely a GAA ring situation last year or the year before. And obviously, completely Americanized.
Yeah, it's a bit egomaniacal to wear your medals out. Like, no one would wear their medals out, so having a load of rings seems a bit
odd. But then again, like, nobody wears a medal as a piece of clothing, but people wear rings as
It's your way around that.
That thing is not a piece of clothing. That's not an accessory. That's a statement.
It can be if you're cool enough. Like,
if you're playing football for France at the minute, you can wear that ring and get away with it.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, if you've just won the World Cup, if you like, think about that. You're not wearing it to meet your girlfriend's parents, but you are wearing it in the club after
you definitely are wearing it to meet your girlfriend's parents.
I don't know.
Pogba said, "We handed them out to the players. Not mentioned of actually the management team or any of the backroom staff.
Screw
got
them.
These rings.
They're our lads. They're not going to wear it."
The reaction was good. They thanked me. "It's a small gesture after winning a World Cup with great players. I consider them my family. It's a small gift from me to my family."
You should be considering making your girlfriend's parents kiss your ring as you meet them. That's the sort of level of ego that the France football players should have as they go around wearing that sort of thing.
They're not far off that level of ego by the looks of things.
Are you single on?
We can it's not something I would consider doing, but it's something that the French football player. I don't have any World Cup medals.
Kiss my cheese, Alan Partridge.
Yes, if somebody were to donate everything, however, then
bend over his head, didn't it?
Yeah,
no idea.
Just one point, you know, during Shot Clock, Kieran Donnelly mentioned 2014, and the production line is finished. It was like they literally won every minor Ireland since.
It's funny you mention that, because when Cork hammered them that day, and this is the lowest I've ever sunk as a sports fan, I bet on Cork to win that Munster final. I didn't just think that Kerry were going to lose that day. I thought that Kerry were going to get hammered that day, and the opposite happened. They absolutely destroyed Cork and won in All-Ireland, and I thought the Miners were going to lose that day as well, but they won the Munster final, they won the All-Ireland, and haven't stopped winning since. So basically everything that I say just basically turns to shit.
I haven't seen a mashup though of that Brawley clip and anybody, you know, doing clicking forward year after year after year after year for the five in a row minors.
Well, there's a great idea there that we should probably steal.
Manchester United have given Barcelona a taste of their own medicine by charging the club's fans €110 for individual tickets. They're doing so in order to subsidise entry for their supporters to the new camp. The two teams will meet in the Champions League quarterfinals, but United fans have been hit by extortionate prices. The Spanish side are charging United supporters a staggering €110 per ticket, the most expensive fee for United history outside of a Champions League final. In response, United will charge Barcelona fans the same price for the first leg at Old Trafford. Now, the former Ireland head coach Philip Doyle believes the IRFU have dismantled the women's 15s game. Ireland managed just one win in the Six Nations this season. They slumped to 4 defeats in 5 games. They finished 5th in the overall standings. A first ever Six Nations loss to Italy further compounded the crisis. They've dropped to 10th in the latest world rankings, the lowest they've been in a decade. And Doyle says the team's misery is down to the IRFU switching focus from the 15s to the 7s game.
There won't be a 15s team to play for. Really, I am very, very disappointed. You got to see it from my point of view, and people like me, that we built something brilliant over many years, and it's slowly but surely been dismantled bit by bit, as far as I can see, because it's not been looked after at all. And I'm very annoyed about it. And why shouldn't I, and why shouldn't everybody else be? It hasn't been brought forward. Like we gave them a base, a fantastic base to go from, and they have slowly but surely just, there's no technical direction. There's nothing going forward. The coaches are saying, you know, we made progress. No, they didn't. They made no progress this year. They're going backwards.
Now, there's more from Philip Doyle and Fiona Steed on the website offtheball.com. Teddy Taylor says, becoming the undisputed lightweight champion of the world is her biggest challenge yet. The brave boxer is on a collision course with Delphine Pearsoon. Her promoter, Eddie Hearn, has confirmed that talks for an undisputed unification bout are almost complete. Taylor set to box on the undercard of Anthony Joshua's heavyweight title defence against Jarrell Miller on June 1st. The 32-year-old made history by becoming the first Irish fighter to hold 3 of the 4 major world titles during the alphabet era. She defeated Rose Valente last Sunday to add the WBO lightweight strap to her WBA and IBF belts. Taylor knows Pearsoon is another level up.
That's the fight that I want next, actually. It's always been my goal to become the undisputed champion, and I've got 3 belts now and want to go, and she's going to be my toughest opponent to date. I think she's been a long reigning champion for years now. She's been in the pound for pound rankings for years as well, so she's a fantastic champion, and that fight has been talked about for over a year now between myself and Delphine Pearsoon, so that's going to be an absolute super fight.
Sorry, Darren. I've just dug a little bit deeper into the ring situation here. It was Kerry GEA, and do you want to have a guess at which Kerry player suggested that they get rings?
Donaghy.
Kieran Donaghy.
Ah, right. Good idea.
Yeah, great idea.
And, we have a picture of the rings.
Yeah, tweeted in December 2014 saying thanks to John Ross Jewelers and Kelleher's Garage for sponsoring the fab handcrafted rings for us last night.
There you go. Kiri look cool on the sides, says Tommy.
So would you be wearing that to meet the other house parents?
It's like, yeah, I think so. It's like it's not as bling as the one with the diamonds from like the, you know, world champions. They should get Kerry world champions on it. That would be the type of thing that the lack of hubris.
It's certainly not as tacky. Like it's quite a respectful, quite a nice ring. It's not as bad as that gaudy CZ encrusted.
But the point about it is that it's supposed to be gaudy. It's like you've done this remarkable thing, you get this gaudy trinket. Like a gold medal is a pretty gaudy trinket.
I know, there's something classy about a gold medal.
Is
something
there?
Festooned with horrible little diamonds and... No, it's... egomaniacs running wild. I don't like it. That's terrible looking. That looks like a piece of costume jewellery. Something Captain Jack Sparrow would steal from a treasure chest at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
Whereas that looks like... just something that he wouldn't steal, like he'd leave it behind.
Your granny would give you to celebrate like your communion or your confirmation.
I guess it depends like, how fly your granny is.
Nice, respectful.
Right.
One more story, and it's Potter Carrington has moved to 1 under par during the first round of the Maybank Championship in Malaysia. It is the Ryder Cup captain's first tournament since injuring his wrist in November. With 13 holes played, Harrington lies 6 shots behind the joint leaders, Australia's Marcus Fraser and Nacho Alvira of Spain. Keep up to date with all the latest sports news and views on our website, offtheball.com.
Good stuff. Thanks very much for that, Darren. Now, Eddie O'Sullivan wants to see some big changes from Johnny Sexton between now and the Rugby World Cup. Have a look.
The likes in particular of Sexton and O'Brien with a view to the World Cup. How worried are we in those departments?
I wouldn't be worried per se. I think Johnny has had a poor championship. Like, I suppose it's impossible going to replicate last year. But I do think that he has to kind of recalibrate his attitude on the field. You know, I've talked about this earlier in the year myself, that I think he's a great player and that he drives people around him. He's a very high standard himself. I don't think he's particularly a great captain because he balls out referees and he chides the players a lot publicly. And I think that he's taken that to a kind of a new level in the Six Nations. And maybe when you're on top of the world and you're playing really well, people say, okay, that's fine. But when you're not delivering yourself, you know, you've got to dial it back a little bit. And I'm not saying he shouldn't kind of take leadership and take ownership and do what he always does, but I just think that his body language is poor. He's shown his frustrations himself, and I think he's got to think about that, and he's got to get away from that image he's now created about himself. And I don't think it helps the team when he does that. I mean, I think he helps the team best when he's on top of his game, and if he just goes back to focusing on what he does well, and if things go wrong, they go wrong. But get back to the headspace he's in, where he's not annoyed with everybody and with everything on the field. And he seems to get that impression at the moment, and he's frustrated. He's got to find a way of backing off that, because if he continues in that vein, he's not going to find his form. Because, you know, your head is fried. Like he's ultra-competitive, and that's the hallmark of all the great players. They're ultra-competitive, but it's known... when you that competitive edge has taken you away from what you do best because you're frustrated. So I think he's got to recalibrate.
Eddie O'Sullivan there talking about Johnny Sexton. You can get the full Wednesday Night Rugby experience over on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/offtheball. Or of course, you can just listen to the podcast on the Off The Wall website, offtheball.com. Neil Tracy is here to talk to us about the new rugby rules. Neil, the... laws. My bad. The suggested changes to the laws are to try and make the game safer.
Yeah.
That's ostensibly what's happening here.
Yeah, it's all come from the World Rugby Player Welfare and Law Symposium, which was happening over the last few days. Now, these at the moment, I think it's that 8 kind of potential trial laws are emerging from it. We definitely aren't going to see them yet. What's going to happen is these 8 are pretty much going to be taken. A review group essentially are going to look through them in detail, try find all the pitfalls in them, the potential pitfalls, see what could work, what couldn't work, and they'll narrow that down then, and anything that goes forward to be an experimental kind of trial would start from January. So we are a good while away from it yet. The big one though that came out of this, the big proposed change would be it's copying the 40-20 in rugby league. So what Rugby Union would be doing is their own version, the 50-22, which would be that if you kick the ball inside your own half and it bounces and goes into touch in the opposition 22, you will get that line out, as opposed to now where it's the opposition line out ball. Right. Yeah. So the idea behind this is that there are so many players on the front line at the moment of a ruck, right across that offside line. It's pretty much a ruck and every other player, bar a full back essentially, who's back there. But if there's an incentive for you're just inside your own half, that you can kick behind and potentially get a line out in the opposition 22 and a massive, you know, try scoring platform, a couple of wingers are going to have to drop back. There's going to be less bodies on the front line. It's going to encourage attacking rugby.
Coming out of retirement.
Spiral kicks into the corner. It's obviously there's a lot to be fleshed out in it. It's one of the proposals anyway. I'd like to actually see it given a go anyway.
Was this ever the case? Did you ever used to be able to kick the ball to touch and get your own line out apart from a penalty? Like in the 80s, 70s?
No, I don't think so.
Just that was our... Because that's... That, my memory...
Well, you see, the one from the past would have been that they obviously got rid of... You can't bring the ball back into your own 22 anymore to kick it out, which is what would have been a big thing in the past.
My recollection of watching early 80s Six Nations, Five Nations games where Ireland would kick the ball to touch and we'd celebrate... You'd be like,
But back then as well, you know, the lineup probably would have been a bit more of a contest.
Yeah.
Because well, you're obviously not lifting.
Yeah,
it's
you got a tall guy, you could probably win their ball quite a lot. So would we not just go back a little bit to that? Like, or the point what they're saying
that's
is that
exactly what they. I think that's exactly what they want to do, because they made the point of saying that compared to the 1987 World Cup final, players on average are 12 kilos heavier. Right. At the moment, 76% of concussions in rugby are happening in the tackle. So what they want to do is
reduce the number of tackles.
Pretty much, yeah. Like there are way more tackles happening now than there would have been 20 years ago. So if you reduce the amount of that, you're reducing the amount of concussions that can happen. You're also, you know, creating the opportunity for more attacking rugby.
So you basically need to have five people in the or however few people you can use, but you'll need to have deep lying wingers who are trying to prevent the ball from going into touch.
Yeah, like, I mean, you really would... You'd need at least one extra player dropping back. If the ball's in midfield, you might even need two because you could go either side. But it just... and probably a scrum half dropping back to prevent a little chip through the middle. So it just... It's all about just keeping less players on the front line of defence.
Yeah.
And reducing the impact of the collisions as well.
What is the... So you had the 20-50 rule in...
40-20.
So there's like, you can do this in rugby league at the moment.
Yeah. Now what I have seen a few people complaining about this morning, and it might be a valid argument, is that maybe 50-22, it might just be the wrong ratio. Maybe if you bring it back to your own 40 instead of the halfway line.
Yeah.
Because maybe having it inside your own half, it might just be a little bit too easy to get the ball out
on the halfway line. You can kick to the inside the 22 and get a line out inside their 22.
Yeah, has to bounce obviously before it goes into touch. But maybe if you just bring it back 10 more yards, it might just make it a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure that's the kind of thing that they'll be trying to flesh out themselves when they look further into it over the summer.
And so generally there's like they test these in the under 20 World Cups and things like that. Is there a specified plan for what might happen, when we might see this being trialled?
Well, if we are going to see it, it would come in January. They'll look through it all now and kind of figure out the ins and outs of it all and what will and won't work. There are a couple of other bits that they're looking at as well.
Globally, it would just come in, that's it, rule change done, off you go.
Sometimes they might trial us, like we'll say, there's one here that they tried last year in the under 20s where they gave out high tackle warnings. So maybe after the game, if they notice particular players were standing up a little bit too much in tackles, not necessarily like swinging arms or anything like that, but just a little bit borderline, they'll give them a warning. If you get two of them, you're banned for a game.
Okay.
Now what happened in the under 20s championship last year was 11 players got a warning, nobody got a second warning. I think they've kind of said the sample size maybe was a little bit too small, so they're going to look at it more again.
It's a bit like the black card coming in GAA and then everybody deciding, oof, can't give you a black card, it's too, like, what, either, you know.
Yeah, and staying on cards as well, what they're actually looking at as well is that if a yellow card is given for dangerous play or, you know, a high tackle or something like that, then while that player is in the bin, a TMO can review it and have a look over it to see does it need to be bumped up to a red card. Because we have seen it before where a yellow card is given out and you're looking back at it going, you know, his shoulder to a head or something like that. Yeah. That should really be a red. The TMO now will have it in his power to look through it and kind of recommend to the referee to go back and change his mind.
That makes perfect sense.
And, the Games Gone Soft Brigade are going to be absolutely squirming over it.
Oh, why though? Here's the point. There are so many yellow cards that you go, that guy's really lucky, but it's been dealt with by the referee, signing commissioner can't. That's all nonsense. If you see something and you have the opportunity to fix it and you have somebody whose job it is to sit there and go, that should have been a red card, we made a mistake, fix it immediately so that it's not the next team who gets the benefit of that.
Yeah, we saw it a few weeks ago when Leinster played the Cheetahs of the RDS. Oxenche, the Cheetahs, was yellow carded for a tackle, shoulder to the head on Fergus McFadden, and Nigel Owens looked at it several times, gave a yellow card very quickly and didn't kind of go back and upturn it to a red. I think Inche got a 6-week ban after it. Like, you know, it was absolutely a red card offence.
So fixing mistakes.
There are a couple of other little ones there. They're going to look at things like offside line, number of subs, committing players to the ruck. One interesting one as well, I saw in the piece in the Times this morning, it was mentioned they're looking at introducing a scrum clock, a countdown clock on the scrum. Because at the moment there's 62 seconds on average per scrum, and
it's supposed to be something like
it does kill the momentum of the game and things like that. I would say though that putting kind of a countdown on it or a set time on it, that probably would actually go against player welfare, because you have something like the scrum where a collapsed scrum, something that's rushed, that could result in a broken neck, that could result in serious injury. You know, I'm sure there are other ways to tweak it around. Maybe if a scrum collapses after the first go, or a scrum has to be reset, then the clock stops. It doesn't go back on until the ball is out in play again. It's not necessarily putting players under pressure to get this done as quick as possible, and you're not losing time off the game clock.
Yeah. So is the issue the time off the game clock, or is the issue that
it's just taking too long
and it's killing everybody's sense of joy? It's oh Jesus.
And what you do have sometimes as well is in the last 5 minutes an attacking team, you know, there'll be a knee drop there, it might have to be reset two or three times, all of a sudden you've lost 2.5-3 minutes of the game. You know, if it goes down maybe after the first go, you've lost 30 seconds, clock stops, and when the ball is out in play again, restart it.
Are you in favour of these generally?
I like the 50-22 idea. I would just, even if it turns out to be absolute rubbish, I'd like to just see it given a go.
Yeah.
At some level of rugby, just to see what we all think of it.
I mean, if you're a good kicking out half, you can now play until you're 60.
And also potentially a few more mauls, rolling mauls towards the try line. I'm all in favour of that.
The type 5 will have more content than ever next year.
Good stuff, Neil. Thanks for explaining all of that to us. That's pretty much all from us this morning on OTBAM. Just use the hashtag OTBAM on whatever social platform and we'll find it from you if you've got anything you want to say to us. Plenty more coming your way across Off the Ball today. The Hurling Show is live on all of our platforms at 3 o'clock. Off the Ball tonight from 7. John Giles, Paul McGinley, Vinnie Perth. Off the Ball is live tonight. Off the Brawl is live tonight just after 10 o'clock. Jason Quigley is also on the show this evening. We'll be back tomorrow for Friday morning's OTBAM at 7:45. We'll see you then. Good luck. So, if you like this, you'll probably also like OTBAM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Subscribe to the OTBAM podcast stream or catch the show live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook or offtheball.com every morning from 7:45 a.m.